23,000 and a half people.
Brings you.
I think I got that wrong.
Phoenix City.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix City. For this week, we've been talking about children's TV shows, so I'm going to end that. I'm going to start a podcast now.
Probably best.
Everyone's here. Dave, you here?
I am here.
That's weird. Frosty, you're here?
Yeah, I'm always here.
That's weird when I'm in the room. And Cam, you're here as well.
I pretty much don't really miss that many of them, to be honest.
No, it's not weird that you're here, but it's weird that we're all here together.
It is.
Yep. It's very strange.
It's also weird that we're winning.
We also discovered that we only have three microphone cables in the suitcase and
whose,
has all the
whose
gear.
Fault is that, Pat?
It's probably mine, but it's probably something that I did like 4 months ago. We just haven't had this problem for a while.
It feels pre-Christmas.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we've all basically been in the room since Christmas.
No, it's before that. Yeah, long time
before. We were all in the same building like 3 weeks ago, and the podcast had never got released because we were saying too many things about Suzy K that we had to not release that one. But
It was inappropriate.
It was inappropriate.
I still don't actually know the Suzy Cato discussion. I just know that's a thing.
It was inappropriate.
You just need to know that Suzy Cato was mentioned and Patrick was in the room.
Mm. You guys would... Okay, let's move on and talk about some football because the Phoenix travelled to Eden Park in Auckland and came away with a point from the Melbourne Victory, which has been a recurring theme this season. That is a podcast violation, Dave.
It definitely is. It's the swipe card that I used to let you in. So.
Yeah, so we're thankful you let us in because that would have been weird if you didn't. But you guys are pointing at Cam and Dave were up in Auckland. Mm-hmm. How was the Eden Park experience? Ignoring the football for a second, how was Eden Park and how was the trip?
Much better than it has been in the past, like really, really good. So, a couple of things that, first up, we'll give a little bit of credit to Tracy because so previously, people have known I used to liaise with the club. This season I haven't been doing that. Tracy has taken over and she did a fantastic job organizing this one, where conveniently from the club side, they were willing to let us try a bit more. I mean, with stuff like safe smoke and things, they've been letting a bit more stuff go. For this Auckland game, they were willing to, play some audio for us over the loudspeaker and put some stuff up on the big screen, which made a huge difference.
Was that about what
to
happened?
Being able to organize the zones? They had kind of rules of the zone up and we're reading out a thing about how people won't be in allocated seats. People will be standing up. If you have any problems, talk to security and they'll find another seat for you, basically. So there were a few people kind of looking for seats, but the second it was said over the loudspeaker, they go, oh, these people aren't making this up. That is actually a thing. Security will sort me out. And to be honest, most of those people didn't even worry about going and talking to security. They just found another seat nearby and it was absolutely fine.
Sounds like it was a fun night then.
Yeah. And so literally there wasn't a problem. And we had a few people who were like, yeah, no, if you want your seat, you're welcome to have it. Like you can come here in the middle. That's totally fine. But
you're in the middle.
You're in the middle. So you're going to need to stand. And there were a couple of groups of, I'd say like 40, 50 year olds kind of in the middle there, but they had a great night. They absolutely loved it. They're like, this is the best experience we've had. And it was their first Phoenix game. I'm like, that's kind of cool that you guys were like, nah, we'll give it a go. And absolutely loved it. So that was really cool. And it definitely was, I would say, the first game in a long time where we've had one of those away zones without a single problem. I certainly wasn't aware of any, other than there were some issues with, it wasn't the fever, but some people waving flags at the back during gameplay and that pissing some people off,
which is
understandable.
Statement.
Yeah. So that's the only issue I heard of. Yeah. But again, I'm not that liaison anymore. So maybe there's some other stuff I'm not across, but it sounded like it went really bloody well. Yeah.
How was the atmosphere pitch side, Cam?
Yeah, I love Eden Park anyway. I think it's a great place for shooting football. It's purely on a technical point. The lighting's good and it's really nice having the tiered seating in the background.
I asked you, how was the atmosphere? Not how was the aperture?
I actually found the atmosphere.
That's a word, right? Was, aperture?
Yes, that is. The aperture.
Yes, nailed it.
That's 1-0 to Patrick. the atmosphere was actually a little poor pitch side.
Yeah.
And I think the single problem with that was there was no roof over the field.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That was my – I have two complaints that I've already given a glowing review. Two complaints. One, the spot we were in didn't have a roof above it, which does kill the noise a little. So that's always sad. But it was still a really fun zone, but I don't know that that would have carried to the far side of the ground.
Definitely didn't. When I was on the far side of the ground, there was no noise that I could hear. I could hear more coming from the small group of Victory fans who had a roof over them. And when I was talking to Domi after the game, I specifically said, like, there's a lot of noise in that zone, but it's going straight up. If you remember the Napier game being the perfect example where you had a small zone, but it was really, really vociferous, and they had a roof over them that was quite low. So it was really loud.
If you just pick up that shed from McLean Park and take it all around the country with us, we'll be fine.
It would be perfect, actually.
Yeah, New Plymouth as well, same thing. Yes. Not big zones, but that roof just makes such a big difference.
Yeah, it pushes the noise out over. So it was. It looked like it was a lot of fun, though.
Yeah.
And like the guys were, they were making a lot of noise. Whenever I was close, it was nice and loud. It was really, really good. So, yeah, it was good pitch side.
Well, if McLean Park's having all that problem with the sun getting in the cricketers' eyes, how about we just pick up their stand and stick it in Hutt Reek?
Because it'll flood every couple of days here in Wellington based on the drainage.
And there's one pretty similar to that already at Hutt Reek. So,
that Hutt Reek stand would be perfect for us.
It would. It would actually be ideal.
All right. We should build our own stand that we can kit set and take with us everywhere.
Everywhere.
But
Lego.
Bring your own roof.
The other complaint, queues still a nightmare at Eden Park. They still really struggle with that. So they had a decent crowd in and all the places open, but still really long queues, which is a bit of a nightmare. But they have done some stuff fairly similar to Westpac, where you had little kind of foodie truck things a bit further around. Queues on those were less bad. And the Fever definitely endorsed the fact that there was one selling just Red Bull vodkas. That was
what?
A fantastic development.
$9 Red Bull vodkas.
That's amazing.
Not $9.50, same price as Spates.
That's all right.
Yeah, I heard that.
Was that competitive position near the Fever zone?
It was. Initially, they were having some trouble with their FBOS, though, which I think limited their sales because who carries cash these days?
That might have been
and
a
there was no
feature.
ATM anywhere, but they got their FBOS up and running in the second half. And yeah,
I think
people got involved in that for sure.
It was friend of the Fever, John Palenthorpe, who I saw, who was lamenting the fact that he spent $9.50 on a can of Spates.
Did I take Garage Project up with them? Was it Garage
Project? They did. Yep.
$10 for a garage project or something like that?
Nah, it was a bit pricier, I think.
Okay. Eden Park prices. Kingsland prices. Yes. Oh, well, it sounds like it was a fun trip and made even more fun, I guess, by the fact that the Victory didn't steamroll the Phoenix like I suspected they might. And it was another well-fought draw between the two sides of the season. 1-1 in the end. A Kiske Honda penalty balancing out the Roy Krishna goal. The first half was pretty even, really.
Actually, I think the whole game was pretty even.
Yeah, neither team really said we should have won that. I think a draw was fair in the end.
Yeah, I think territory and possession, very small margin to Victory, but we're only talking like 3 or 4%. It wasn't massive.
Margin of error, territory.
Yeah, they created more opportunities in front of goal, probably had the better opportunities, but they weren't overly dominant. I think they were the better side as a team in second place would be compared to where we are in the league. But we held our own and we created plenty of opportunities, played really good, open, flowing football, as did they. And the whole thing was actually a really good spectacle. It really sold it for Eden Park, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I might be misremembering slightly because there were certainly some Red Bull vodkas consumed. But it definitely felt to me like while they created more opportunities, I think they created more kind of 50, 60% opportunities. And when it came to the 80, 90%, we probably had more of those. There were definitely a couple of times I thought we absolutely should have scored that. But some good keeping at both ends. There was quite a late chance, I think it fell to Roy in the end through one-on-one that Thomas makes a great save on. But Curto had made a couple earlier as well.
He made a really good one-on-one right at about 20th minute.
Yeah, and so it's one of those ones where I think the number of chances certainly fell in their favour, I feel, but we probably had a couple that were the best chances of the game that we didn't score. So on balance, I think that probably does end up pretty even.
Yeah, so I even think that was quite even because they hit the post.
Yep.
We had the goal mouth scramble that should have gone in.
Yep.
We had a couple one-on-one saved. They had a couple of one-on-one saved. So, it was it was pretty even all around. It was just really entertaining football to watch, to be honest.
Slightly disappointing that the penalty they ended up scoring from was a little bit soft. I mean, it's a penalty, absolutely, and particularly, there were people in the crowd expecting that to get overturned on VAR. No way, there's contact. I mean, once that's awarded, it's staying as it is. But I think it's soft. I mean, finished well by Honda, but you'd like them to have scored a better goal than that, given the chances they did have. They deserved one that wasn't that one.
I think this is actually a clear-cut penalty. I think you have two players coming in and sandwiching a play like that, and the other player can't go anywhere.
They're crossing the line of the ball. Yeah. It's pretty simple.
And if it's only one of those two players, and if it's only, I think it was Louis Fenton and Roy.
If it was just Roy, I think it's shoulder to shoulder is exactly. Foul. Yeah.
But when you got in two players sandwiching the player together, there's no way for them to go, and you.
I don't even think it's that. I think Louis pushes him.
But even then, that's
Roy gets in front. Louis realizes he's not getting there and commits a foul.
Even then, a push in the box. It's a contact sport. Like that can still be not a penalty.
If you remove Roy from the situation, though, I think it's still going to end up a penalty. Fenton's getting beaten and he makes a dumb decision. Fair. It's a soft push, but I think it's so clear cut and about to be a shot that you've got to give the penalty.
Brox was looking for it, and as soon as he felt it, he went down. And you've got to say, that's very professional experience.
There's been times in this season where I've yelled at Phoenix players, go down, because they've rode a challenge inside the box. It's like, no, if you just take the contact, fall over, you get the penalty there. And this is exactly what happened.
And now that Roy's not taking them, we might score some.
It's a horrendous balance, though, right? Because as a Phoenix fan who wants us to win, I agree. There's absolutely times I'm like, you should have just gone down. But as a Phoenix fan, I also love the fact that we're not a team who looks to go down easy, that we try and ride those challenges and we try and actually tough it out. I like that that's our mentality.
I don't know.
But the other half of me goes, but we'd win more games if we just went down in the box. Yeah. But I don't want to have a team of divers.
How do you
strike that balance of not looking like a bunch of guys biffing yourself to the deck every time you get in the box? Because there are teams that are like that, and there are certainly players that are like that in the league, and we all hate them for it. But I don't want our players to be that.
You say that, but I do enjoy someone who goes down easily. So,
oh, fuck, Pat.
Just let that simmer for a while.
Is simmer the right word?
I don't know.
No, it's not.
Hang.
Considering he's not single now, what's he really saying here?
Nothing. Mm-hmm. I came up with a joke and I had to wait 40 seconds while Dave finished his point to make it. I kind of disagree with what you said earlier, Cam, about it being a spectacle. I didn't think it was at all. I thought that the midfield play from both teams was poor. There was a lot of ball being turned over in that midfield that was just from shit touches, classic Hamish Watson kind of touches, players misplacing passes, and the first half in particular was, to be honest, woeful. Yes, it was attacking, but it was attacking because players were making mistakes. We got our goal from a mistake from Stormaroo, and it was players making stupid mistakes that was opening things up a little bit, and I can see why you say that was entertaining for the neutrals, because it is, but it also wasn't high quality.
No.
That's the type of game, though, that you want to see in a third venue or second venue. You know, when you take a game on the road, you want that kind of open kind of football, because that's the stuff that people will come back and watch.
I don't want to put that on Stormaroo. That was Ding got a touch on it and threw it out, which is a shame because Ding had a really good game.
So that's Stormaroo.
Yeah, he didn't actually play too badly. But the first half for me was, there were so many really poor passes, and they weren't hard passes. I mean, I think Rufa had something like three or four intercepts, and two were just passes straight to him from Melbourne, and he just stood there and went, oh, yeah, all right, I'll take that.
He was returning the favour, though.
Yes, he did as well. Mundy did one as well, but there was just, you know, there were short little passes that they were trying to link up and just weren't quite getting it. I don't know whether it was a bit of, you know, the getting sucked up into the, you know, experience. You know, 23,000 people is still a lot for the Melbourne team even. So, you know,
they average 21,000. So it's a normal crowd for them.
It's the fifth highest crowd of the season across the whole league.
Sure, but they still average 21,000 because of the Melbourne Derby pushed them up. But they're used to getting 17,000, 18,000.
Nah. But it's certainly not.
Even at home, they don't get that. They are only pushed by really big derbies. Okay. At the moment, they're getting 8,000 or 9,000 pretty consistently.
Okay. I stand corrected. So,
and certainly they wouldn't get anything like that in a game outside Sydney FC.
Yeah, fair.
Yep.
But no, I agree. I think this one was absolutely an entertaining game, but I think it was scrappy at best. It wasn't a good game of football, but I think Cam's point's right. If that in many ways is, I mean, we'd love to have a entertaining, high quality game of football, but this is the A-League. You can't have all of it all in one go. So I think we'd much prefer that in front of 23,000 people, we put on an entertaining game than have a game that was a bit one-sided that was, you know, had nicer goals, you know?
And unless we win 3 or 4 nil, which would also be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was all summarised that, like, the entertaining but not particularly good was that Kikuchi run up the left wing right at the end where he sticks Honda on his ass.
Yeah.
Except Honda didn't really get stuck on his ass so much as he fell over, and Kikuchi went, "Oh, well, I guess I'll run past you. I'm a bit knackered. I've already stopped twice on this run just to look up."
Yeah.
And it was just, yeah. He stopped 3 times, skinned 2 players, one guy sat down, and then nothing really happened in the end anyway, but it was still exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was, I think you touched on this one earlier, it might have been you, Dave, the chance that ended up falling to Roy when we're on the counterattack.
Yeah.
I can't remember who else was involved in the counterattack, but it must have been Sapre and someone like that. But that was a goal that I think we should be sodding.
One all towards the end?
Yeah.
I think that was Sheridan.
Sheridan as well?
Was,
probably.
Yeah, yeah. And there was the other one was Williams feeding, where Lawrence Thomas made an excellent save as well.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So, but that's the chance that Roy needs to be slotting.
Yeah. Both of those should have been goals.
It's hard to blame Roy for that, because what happens on the one you're talking about is Thomas gambles well. He gambles the ball is going to Roy.
Yeah,
he gets out and he pressures him early. If the person who's playing that ball to Roy realizes Thomas is committed and is now well out of position and shoots instead, we score. But once that ball's going to Roy and Thomas has gambled right, there's nothing Roy can do at that point, because Thomas is just coming through him.
He's also gambling that Roy is going to shoot first time and not take a touch. If he takes
if he tries to take a touch, Thomas is going through him.
Oh, but yeah.
maybe you win a penalty, but he's not getting a shot on goal.
If he chops in. Yeah. Thomas is not even getting a look at it.
Yeah, but it's one of those ones where he gambles, and he gambles right.
But that's exactly what a keeper's job is half the time.
Exactly,
yeah. Someone mentioned earlier on that we saw 2 good goalkeeping performances, and that's because these are the two best goalkeepers in the league.
Oh, by a long way.
Like, there is nobody else who factors into who's the best goalkeeper this season. It's Lawrence Thomas and it's Philip Curto. And I think we saw that with some of the saves they pulled off in this game.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for Roy having the season he is having and being in line for the player of the season for the league, I think Curto would be our number one for the season. He's had such an outstanding performance.
I don't get that. Curto's by a massive margin the best player in our team.
Yeah, well, he suffers from being a keeper effectively, and so he doesn't get the glory that Roy can miss.
No glory in being a keeper.
But Roy can miss 4 chances like he did on the weekend and still slot and still pick up 3 points.
Yep.
Whereas Curto, he makes 7 saves but lets one in, and he doesn't pick up 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, you look at when they've been picking the player of the round. How many times has Curto been the keeper?
Actually, surprisingly often.
Yeah. That's my point.
I don't think it's surprising at all.
No.
But surprising, because usually keepers don't get glory. But in terms of the performances we've been putting out.
Well, he's been keeper of the round probably half the rounds. Whereas, you know, Roy has probably only been in there maybe 3 times.
And Ollie picked it up as well for one of those weeks. Yeah. Which says a lot about the performance of our defenders as well, to be fair.
And the goalkeeping coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not just someone who can get on people's nerves at halftime. He's actually a good goalkeeping coach. So,
I think Cam was making the opposite point to you, though, that the defenders are letting a few too many chances through.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, right. See, sorry.
We're relying a little bit too much
on Curto.
While trying to bring up the stats on my phone for this game, also just trying to get in that I really enjoy watching Paul Gotard at halftime.
Yeah, I do.
One of my highlights of match days.
Can you tell me? Because I don't see that. I'm always underneath the stadium.
So he's always either running to the refs to have a go and have a chat, to take the pressure off
Mark and Greeny.
So that they're not the ones getting in trouble for it. Or he's going to go and have a chat to someone on the opposition team and wow them up. So he's always going and finding somebody and causing some sort of trouble. And as they all come down the tunnel, don't go and get your Fritz's wieners before all the players and all the staff are down the tunnel, because it is so entertaining.
I've got to say, the other thing that I quite enjoyed about this game was Sheridan. He showed up to play, whereas that last game, he pretty much honked it up. I thought he was quite poor. But
he only had 12 minutes to play.
Yeah, but with those 12 minutes, he didn't look to play too much. He was just looking to link up, and I thought he did that. Like, I don't think he did anything that he wouldn't have gone, actually, that was exactly what I was trying to do. Even on defence, he got back a couple of times and made it took front post and headed a couple of short ones away. I thought he did really well.
I think you're being a little harsh on his previous performance, personally. I think we've seen him turn up every other game bar one and make immediate impact. The number of times, particularly in his first few weeks, where his first touch of the ball was leading to a goal. Like, I think to say he hasn't been turning up is a bit harsh. I think he had one off performance.
Oh, no.
He still was out there, but it just wasn't his day. Whereas pretty much every other day, we've seen him running his ass off and it being highly effective.
Oh, no, I agree. I thought that it was just that last game, but it was everything he did that last game that really wasn't good.
But I feel like he was back to what we've been expecting from him. I think because he's had such immediate impact every other game, we've come to expect impact from him. And I think in that one bad performance, he didn't have any impact. And we're saying it was a failure of his. I'm thinking actually he's just done really bloody well the rest of the time, rather than that being a thing to necessarily criticize for.
I'd go all the way through that. It's like he's been playing really phenomenally, apart from that one game. And the one game he did play badly, he was detrimental. He wasn't that he wasn't contributing. It's just that he actually made things worse.
We've had strikers do that for a long time.
The Mitch Nichols effect.
Oh, there are a lot of strikers that have played for the Knicks.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, I'm not going to crucify him over one bad performance. I think we saw him back to where we have seen him previously, and I'm glad to see it.
Hmm. It does make an interesting kind of question when we're kind of, I guess we kind of look at not just this season, but going forward, you know, is he a guy that we're going to want to keep around long term? Because at the moment, you know, he's doing 20 and 12 minutes. That seems like.
I think if you can get him to a point where he's playing that 70-minute role, absolutely.
Yeah.
What is the reason he isn't playing 70? Is it fitness? Is it something else? Is it just strategy? No, I don't know.
David Williams is playing phenomenal. Yeah,
exactly. And so I think if we're in a position where he can play 70 and play it at the level he's playing 20, then I would happily keep him around, because I think to assume that we're keeping Williams and Roy – and him is probably a fantasy. I think you're gonna have some offers coming in for the others, and I don't know that we can hold them all. It'd be nice if we could, but.
Well, we know that Williams is definitely a commodity overseas, and certainly in the form that he's in.
Yep.
He's gonna get views, and the fact that he's an Asian player means that the Asian market is really gonna dig in for him.
Yeah.
So yeah, if he's here next year, I'd be very surprised.
I think we've got to dig our heels on one of him and Roy, though, for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree.
It'll be Roy.
That would be the smart move, but I also think he's going to attract the bigger money.
Totally agree. I think he'll get lots of offers from just in the A-League, he'll get offers.
I don't know that he's necessarily going to attract the bigger money, but he's going to cost us more to keep him. And a lot
that's
more
the problem
than Williams.
Is everyone's going to cost more to keep them. Sapri Singh's going to cost more. Roy, Williams.
You see, guys like Sapri Louis
is going to be cheaper.
Alex Ruther even will be asking for more. Like
they may be asking for more. Ruther's got he's got a European passport, so you know he has other options. Sarpreet doesn't. Louis doesn't. Doyle doesn't.
They're not likely to get picked up as visa players in Australia either. Sarpreet might, but
I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about trying to keep people under.
He's talking just pure contract renewal,
just salary caps. We can't keep this exact same squad next year because they'll all want more money, and we can only do that in certain places.
But the thing is, they can ask for more money, but where are they going to go to justify that sort of money?
They're still going to ask, you know, in any job, it's fair enough to ask for a 5 or 10% or, you know, whatever every year or two. That's not abnormal. So I think it's those increases you're talking about here, not necessarily because we think they're going somewhere, but they're going to want more money, and fair enough. But equally, there'll be some other players who you'd imagine might not be around longer, like someone like Jura. This might be his last season. It might not. He might have one more.
The problem is,
someone like him does free up some money to spread around those small increases to the others, probably.
Sure, and yeah, Burns isn't likely to be here next season, obviously, just on his performances, and he will free up a lot of cash as well. Exactly the point.
You worked a sponsor in there, Frosty. That was.
Do you think he's on much this year, though? I don't think he is.
No,
I think he was previously. I think this time around, Burns is not coming at a price.
I think he's on what we signed him on for this contract, which was a year ago. When we brought him back from Sam Frecce, Hiroshima.
And he wasn't playing.
He wasn't playing. He came back and just wanted game time.
He just wanted to get a contract and game time. I think he's on minimum. I don't think we give him.
I don't think he's on minimum. He wouldn't be here for minimum.
Sorry. Not minimum, but like minimum in terms of his pay scale through his career.
Yeah.
In terms of it's probably on 120 rather than 150, 160 kind of area. But so
still let. You know, when you're talking, you know, 5 or 10% for some of the other players, they'll be well closer to that minimum. So
it's just interesting that you spoke about who do you keep, but you can't keep everybody.
No.
I think that's a really good segue into the fact that we have taken, or whether he's taken it, the option on Stephen Taylor for next season.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a fantastic move, and I wonder how much of that the dollar wise, that's going to cost us as well.
Well, no, because it's 1+1. Yeah. So,
but we don't know what the contract was, and the contract may have second year you get X amount more.
But what I've read, and I can't remember if this was an article on Stuff that I read or whether it was the actual press release, it was that the Phoenix had not relied on that +1 trigger or whatever contract and offered him a deal, and that's how we got this, rather than it was the +1 that got triggered or anything like that.
So, okay. I mean,
I haven't seen that anywhere, but that doesn't mean it's not true.
Pure speculation here. I think if Jura's going, they've signed him as a captain. I don't know. That's not been announced publicly. I do not know if Jura's going, but if he is, I reckon they'll sign Stephen Taylor as a captain.
That makes a lot of sense, man.
And that's a lot of money you can move outside the cap for a player like him. Because
captains don't go outside the cap.
I thought there was a portion that you can for a certain player.
No, that's long service.
My bad.
It has nothing to do with captain. So Jura, a portion of his will be outside the cap, but that's
50% of Jura's wages as a player who's been here 10 years, which is 5 years over the threshold of you get 25% and 5% per year.
Yeah.
50% of Jura's is outside the cap, but the player who's next closest to that is Doyle, I think.
Louis
went away and came back, and I think that might complicate the loyalty system.
Doyle and Rufa would be pretty much approaching 5 years now.
And Roy's been here five years as well.
So those three guys,
we could definitely.
How long's Ollie been on the books as well? He's a few years at least.
But he might not have been pro, in inverted commas.
Not five.
Not five. He'd be nearing.
Definitely
but
three.
This is probably his fourth because he was here in the 2015 World Cup.
But
so
you can only put 200K outside the cap in terms of that. It's not you get free money outside the cap generally.
Well, it does kind of bring up the whole question of the rejigging of the A-League that's going to happen next year anyway. It's like presumably with the financials changing of the money coming in, the cap will change as well. So there's a distinct possibility that things would get better within each club as far as how much money they've got to spend on players. So hopefully that kind of sees a lot more retention of players across the league within their respective teams rather than a whole lot of people jumping around left, right and centre for a better deal and also having to bugger off to Japan and Korea and Indonesia and wherever.
I actually think there's every chance a new league structure does away with the long service stuff. Personally, but I think the one thing they probably bring in is transfers come back.
Yep.
I think that
I'd
is,
be
that'll
in favor
be a,
of that.
Yeah. And I think that's fine because it actually, in many ways, solves some of the same problems of trying to allow the smaller clubs to hold on to people by letting them spend outside the cap for it. But actually, every time a Victory poaches a good player of someone else, they have to pay for it. Solves a similar problem.
And Sydney, for sure. The thing is it probably benefits us even more because we are putting so much emphasis on our academy system. You compare that to Melbourne City. You know, as much as they do have an academy, a lot of that is just players brought in from other clubs and, you know, their backups and everything. Just, you know, you see that there's no throughput from any academy players that they do have. Don't get anywhere near their squads.
Yeah. We're getting sidetracked slightly, though, so I want to come back to Taylor because I think there were two really interesting things in the story that weren't necessarily about how the contract came about, but one of the key things that was in the press release, but he also brought it up again in the interviews he did with other media, was the big factor in him signing on again is Rudan, that he's really excited to be working with Rudan next year, and that's a huge factor for him. So while we don't have pen on paper from Rudan about another season,
his contract's till next year.
It's probably a 1+1, though. Everything about the way that's been talked about publicly suggests to me it's a one with an option on a second, because if it was a locked-in, guaranteed second.
I think it's a normal contract where if he gives enough notice, he can leave the contract. That's how I read it.
Which is an option both ways. right?
Like, sure, it's not a 2-year contract. Anyway, that's that's not the point you're trying to make.
It's not locked in, is what I'm saying. We don't have pen on paper.
Yeah, that's not the point you're trying to make. So,
But the fact Taylor's talking like that is really good. I think that says he's at least personally had some chats with Rudan, feels that there's a good chance he's hanging around. But the other interesting thing I think he said was that he's very open to seeing out the rest of his career here. So he wasn't talking about, oh, just one more season. He's talking about, I actually like it here. I'm enjoying my football. And I think that feeds in nicely to the captain thing you're talking about of that would make real sense to me if they're looking at making him captain next year. And he's going, yeah, I've got 3 or 4 years left. I like it here. The money's good and we've got a great coach. And yeah,
and he's
I'm happy to do that. So I think
he's a right fit.
While he's not immediately committing to those years, I think in his mind, he's at least setting up for that to be a possibility, which is really promising for us because we haven't had that in a long time. You know, the last players we had doing that were guys like Jura all those years ago, and it worked out great for us, obviously. But if we can have a Stephen Taylor turn into that, that would be fantastic.
I don't think Jura came here in 2008 and said, I want to finish my career here.
But he said, I want to settle down here. I love this city. And I, you know, he moved here, he made his home here, became a citizen and played for the country, you know. That's not going to happen with Taylor, but settling here and living here for a few years.
Well, you say that.
The fact he's thinking that, great.
I reckon it could happen with Taylor.
No.
You think he's going to play for New Zealand?
I didn't say I think he was going to, but it could. Because by the time he's been here 5 years, he'll be 36.
And we're relying
We've got 36-year-old defenders coming and playing for the All Whites.
How long has that gone for us?
Brilliantly, Patrick. We qualified for the Confeds Cup.
Yes, and then Jura gave away penalties left, right and centre at the Confeds Cup.
Sure. Yep. I'm not going to disagree.
And Jura playing alongside each other.
2022. 2021 playoff, Westpac Stadium. Jura's geriatric. Stephen Taylor's bringing the. Can you imagine the smell?
I'll say it's going to happen.
The smell of Tiger Balm wafting off the paddock.
Looking at the history of New Zealand football, and weirder things have happened. But he's the right fit for a captain. His performances all season have been those of a leader, and he's certainly the type when you watch him on the field who will lift the players around him. You know, it's the hard on the sleeve stuff that we've been missing since Ziggy retired, and it's in that with a guy with more ability and a whole pile of passion and leadership skills.
Can we bring him back to the World Cup team? It's Cam's dream team.
Oh, could you imagine it? Siggy and Taylor and Jura as a starting back three for the All Whites.
Oh, my God.
On the bench, we have Tommy Smith and Winston Reid because they just don't cut it. Pat's just sitting going, shut up, Cam.
I'm just not engaged in this conversation, so no one can be used against me later.
I think he hasn't told you is who the coach is.
Who's the coach?
Ricky.
I know.
Yes,
I will not stoop that low. I will not stoop to Hudson level.
If Tommy Smith is playing, it's probably Hudson.
For me, the captain issue is kind of, it's a fait accompli. I mean, Taylor is the sort of personality, but there is also no one else who is capable of doing that job in my eyes.
We talked about it a year or two ago, thinking Doyle might be the right fit for that. I don't know that he's developed along the right path for it to be the case anymore. But
he would need to have 100%, like, if you're fit, you start. And he doesn't have that.
No. That's the first thing. He's not a starter.
If we were to sign him again, though, I wouldn't mind Curto being captain.
Oh, you see,
the thing with him is it would be a short-term stopgap. I don't think he's staying here for a long time.
Yeah, well, that's
equally, goalkeeper captains have worked out pretty well in the A-League, and he would be able to do it.
I don't think Curto's around next season. I think he goes after one.
Oh, I know. He's got
a two-year contract.
Two-year deal.
So he's here next year.
Wow. So is Rudan.
Yeah. Rudan is contracted. Curto is contracted. There's only 5 guys on contract for next season anyway, so Curto's one of them and Taylor's now one of them. I don't think we're letting these guys go at this point.
No, I don't think we should. But, I mean, I think that the clubs that do well and the periods that they do well, they have that talismanic captain, the guy who's a tent pole for that club. And it may only be for 4 or 5 years, but it's something that they can base around, their personality that everyone can huddle around. And Taylor's that guy, definitely.
Yeah, Jura was that guy, exactly the same. This is why he's left the club for so long.
Yeah, he's also got to be a starting player, and I don't think he's even playing next year, so let alone being a guaranteed starter.
Should we move along to the rest of the round then?
Actually, just the absolute highlight of Auckland was the sale of the Adidas training top.
Yeah, it was on.
It was a match day only special. I think they had something like 200. Well, there's no guarantee they're not going to do that again, but I think they sold a couple of hundred. I'm pretty sure they sold out
in Auckland. Great. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, cool.
People down here have been screaming for that for months.
No, if they've done
we don't have them.
If they've done it just in Auckland, that's ridiculous.
They sold out on the day.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. No, that's so sorry.
Whether that was actually sold out, but the people were trying to buy them as they were leaving. And yeah, they were down to like one of one size.
No, that's ridiculous.
I love that shirt and I'm good on them for selling them, but if you're going to do it,
put it online.
Tell us you're doing it as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would like to pick one. I didn't know. I never get up into the grandstands, obviously, but I would have made the effort if I'd known.
Absolutely. And I would have bought one. We basically only discovered they were on sale because we asked. We saw so many of them. We were like, wait, there's one right there. Oh, it must be a Plasma. I don't know. There's like five of them. Where have they got these from? Oh, they're selling them down there.
Yeah, it's very frustrating that we couldn't buy the kit down here. Anyway, the rest of the round, before we spend an hour talking about Auckland, which nobody wants to do, Newcastle Jets had a surprise 3-1 win over the Melbourne City, which was really good for us. Jair, Joey Chambers and Warren Donovan getting the goals for Newcastle and Jay McLaren getting the one for Melbourne City.
I'd prefer a draw, to be honest.
No, that's fine.
Because I'm quite happy with Newcastle staying a long way behind us.
Well, I'll get to that because Adelaide United also lost 3-1. They lost at home to Western Sydney Wanderers, Aurora Era, Rolly Bonavacci and Abraham Majok, something, got the goals for them. We'll come to the table in a sec, but Perth Glory dispatched Brisbane Roar 4-0. And Central Coast Mariners got a 1-1 draw out of Sydney FC.
That's a great result for them.
Yeah, so where that kind of puts the table is that it's now looking like we could finish ahead of Adelaide and Melbourne City quite easily. And if Newcastle Jets do make it up into the six, it's not necessarily us that they're passing. It could very easily be Melbourne City, who are on the slide worse than we are at the moment.
It is quite tight between us, Adelaide and City, which is I mean, it's great for us, but I think our problem is in the last six games we've won one and we need to really start getting back to those winning ways we had prior to Christmas.
We've played a lot of the tough games, though.
In our last six games we've played the top four or five times.
Yeah, so. Melbourne City have the top three in the next three or four games, so yeah. They will not win all of those.
Yeah. If we get over the Sydney game next, and then I think we've got the Mariners and then the Wanderers as the next two games after that. So I think the next three game stretch is actually quite large for us for the rest of the season. Get something out of the Sydney game. Mariners and Wanderers are two you should win, but go and dispatch them like you should, and that really does cement you as a possible top four contender.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think in some ways it would be nice to have a slightly tough run coming into the finals, actually test ourselves coming in there. And I think the way it looks, last time I looked at the schedule, we do have a slightly easier run. But
yes,
I think that's fine so long as we finish in a fourth spot or higher and can have a home game. I think then that's kind of okay because actually we'll get up for that regardless of whether we've had tough games leading into it. But I think if we're going to end up in that fifth or sixth where we're traveling, it would almost be nicer to have had some tough games to toughen us up into it. So it'll be interesting to see how these next few weeks play out because that'll be the really deciding factor into which of those scenarios we're looking at here.
And also I'd like to have all that locked in before our last round robin game, which is away at Perth.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't want to go into that game relying on a result to get into a sixth or a fourth or something like that.
I'd
prefer to be locked up. Also, having a home playoff after playing in Perth, much better than having an away playoff because...
Yes, and I think...
Unless you go straight there.
That's what I mean, is that you have a Saturday or Sunday game in Perth and then a Friday, Saturday playoff in Australia. You just go and you stay in Sydney for the week and then you play Sydney.
That's also ad hoc. You're not expecting to do that straight away. So that's why it'd be nice to have everything locked in prior to that game against Perth so you know exactly what you're going to do.
Yeah, this is why some certainty would be good because I think you're right. If we're going into that Perth game and the result there is going to dictate where we have to go, you can't really plan that in advance. You're going to have to organise that on the fly and you might not be able to organise it quick enough to stay over there or get to where you need to go. It's going to be messy at best. Yeah. Whereas if you know where you're sitting, you know where you're finishing, that's actually a pretty good position.
If it's certain that we're not going to finish in a home playoff position, you can just go, we're going to spend the week in Sydney and jump over to Melbourne or Adelaide from Sydney. And you can plan that very easily.
It's a Sunday game.
I'm going to push us along because we've been talking for too long. We haven't made that through enough. So next round, we are playing against Sydney FC in Sydney. I had it pointed out to me by Matt. He hasn't sent me Yak stats this week, but a Yak stat that he did say was that we've beaten Sydney FC three times away since the last time we beat them at home. So maybe that's why we're taking this game to Sydney. And we haven't beaten them here
cunning plan.
Since December 2013, whereas we've beaten them over there three times in that time. So that could be why we're doing it. I don't think it is. I think it's all financial-based, but we are playing.
Metrics and money.
Exactly. Yep. We're playing in Campbelltown at a home game. Apparently the Garage Project is going along
stuff.
Which is good for the – I think there are some people travelling. I think our friend Carrie is travelling over, which is really cool. But, yeah, definitely get involved. If you're in Sydney and listening to the podcast, jump out to Campbelltown and make it feel like a home game, even though it will be mostly – Sydney supporters there, but there should be a bump for the metrics, I think, the way that Sydney have been going with their home crowds.
It certainly looks like it'll be a 12 to 15 rather than a 7 to 8.
Exactly,
so.
Which is good and good for
eight
everything.
To nine, but, 8 to 9,
In essence, it's an away game and an away game on the back of the Auckland game, so the team has to keep travelling, but I reckon Sydney are there for the taking this week.
It's worth noting as well, I've seen some stuff on social media late today around the Fever Zone being moved. So if you are planning on traveling over and have tickets, it sounds like the Bay may have shifted and you should have an email about your new tickets. But I don't know the details on that because I'm not going, but that's just the rumblings I've seen. So if you are going and you are listening to this, well worth checking to see that your tickets are in fact still your tickets and cool. That kind of stuff.
Good to know. But Sydney FC there for the taking, especially on the back of that 1-1 draw with Central Coast. Central Coast showed you how you can play against Sydney, and obviously we've done it before this season, but you can play the current Sydney and get a point out of it.
Yeah, if you can keep Lafondre quiet, you're halfway there because he seems to be basically in their goals.
I actually think the back line of Sydney is set up for us to play well against them. And the only thing that Corica did very, very well in the game we lost over here was he set that line quite deep and he set it very rigid so there wasn't the space in between the lines or in between the defenders for Roy and Williams to take advantage of.
That's a good point. It's been that last game was very tactical based on the way the previous one went. So it'd be interesting to see if they just roll out a similar kind of way to counter the team or whether Rudan can set us up to counter that.
For me, it comes down to Singh. Singh's got to take the ownership and take a little bit of onus away from Williams and Roy, who aren't going to get that space in their back four. There's no way Corica reverts to the formation that got them absolutely pantsed.
He won't revert, but he might try something differently because they only won that game 1-0.
That's fine. He doesn't give a shit about winning 1-0.
Sure, but he gives a shit that they were one penalty save away or a penalty miss. Was that the game that Roy missed a penalty in? Penalty save away from giving up the 3 points there. I think he'll worry about that and maybe look to try and get two on the board.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he's just basically – he knows that we've got the capacity for leaking one, and I don't think he's going to take any chances with his back four and his defensive midfield.
So how does Rudan counter that?
For me – it comes down to Singh. Singh's got to be able to play in between those two lines and try to get on the ball and get passing forward.
Single-handedly.
Who else is going to do it?
I was about to say Mitch Nichols.
We have
can
one.
Can you just hit him?
Roy can drop that back, can't he?
He can, but I don't think that serves as much good as Singh dropping back. If Roy drops back, all of a sudden Williams is by himself, he's isolated, and he's much easier to deal with. For the defenders, they can double team and triple team.
And to be fair, for all Roy's attributes and hard work, he's not the creative player that Singh is. He's quick, he gets him behind well and backs himself, which is great for confidence, and he's scoring goals. But he's certainly not the guy that can provide the...
He's a poacher.
He's not the guy that Singh is, who provides those passes, provides me, like gets men into space to create those opportunities.
So
it's a bit different.
You've been describing to me there suggests to me that potentially we should be starting Sheridan over Williams because Sheridan can do all those things as well as Singh, much better than David Williams can.
And I think this is where the problem lies, is I think Singh is very creative, sure, and he's very good at getting himself out of trouble, but he also is prone to being bullied out of a game. Depending on how the ref's dealing with that, they might be kicking lumps out of him. He might be getting nothing. And that's not to say he's not good enough to deal with a bit of that, but a lot of it will depend on how much they bully him and how much they get away with it. Because if he is being relied on to do a lot of that workload and you've got Williams and Roy in front of him and he's not getting the fouls, that'll go very badly for us and you'll need another option.
Yeah, I totally agree about the Sheridan being an option there. Mm. I think that he creates a nice static pivot for you.
He is a good lone striker. Well, I say lone striker, but the point central point striker to for Roy or Williams to play off.
But the problem is exactly what Dave said before. Is he up to playing 70 minutes?
Yeah.
Is he up to playing 70 minutes of what the quality we have seen him play most of this time here? And that would be an unknown. That would be a massive risk for Rudin to do.
You'd hope after as much training and stuff as he's been doing, he's got some minutes in his legs, but we haven't seen it, so we don't know.
And the other thing is, who do you drop? Roy? Probably not. And then Williams? The guy's been banging in goals. It's kind of, you know, it'd be a very big call to drop one of those two guys and go, we need a point of difference with Sheridan. Even though he's only played 20 minutes.
Yeah, my gut feel here is if we do think that Sheridan's got the minutes in his legs, you probably still don't start him, but you need to recognise quickly if they're ganging up on Singh and it's not going to work, you need to be willing to make that call early, even if it's only 20 minutes, half an hour in. I think we need to be willing to go, that's not working, and change it early rather than waiting to wear a goal or two down and trying to fight it back in the last 20 minutes I think against Sydney, they're good enough at just shutting up shop that at that point you might be trying to scrounge a draw at best.
Yeah, the Ernie Merrick special.
Yeah,
half-time change.
I wouldn't be too prone to trying to change everything before before kickoff. I think that's a bit crazy, but I think they need to be ready to look to do something because he's not stupid in how he's going to approach this tactically. And so we need to be ready to counter some of those things that we know he's going to try and do to us.
Yeah.
And I think bullying Singh is a very smart thing to do.
But everyone kind of agreed that the rest of the team is exactly because we just
barring injury. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we literally don't have anyone else.
There's no reason to change it.
There's nothing you're going to do in terms of formation or any of that anywhere else on the field. That you're basically looking at like for like players, who's the better one? Well, I think we've largely accepted that he's picked as number one and as number two in all those positions.
Yeah. All right, the rest of the round. Central Coast Mariners host Brisbane Roar on Friday night. Don't watch it. Melbourne's Victory play Melbourne City from Etihad Stadium.
Do watch that. That'll be good.
Saturday after our game.
Victory could do us a good favour here.
Victory and Perth to pull away, I think, is what we want.
Yeah, we're not going to catch them. Yeah. And if we want to get a home semi, it's probably best that they do.
Newcastle Jets are hosting Adelaide United, which is a big game for the Jets if they want to try and break into the six.
And especially coming back after the Antlers game.
Yeah, they lost 4-1 in the ACL playoff, which is not unexpected. But
the Antlers are not a bad team.
The Antlers. Oh, Kashima. Yeah. Well, they won the thing last year, didn't they?
They've won it multiple occasions.
Yeah. And Western Sydney Wanderers host Perth Glory.
Oof.
Sunday night, 9 p.m. our time. Perth will smash them. Bringing it home to the Handy Prem. And Southern United have done the entire rest of the league a favour and taken a point off Auckland City.
Have they?
Well, it means they don't get bragging rights.
Didn't we talk about that last week?
I'm pretty sure that they do get bragging rights.
What?
They're still freaking unbeaten the entire season.
Sure, but it would be so much worse if they went through a whole season and didn't drop any points whatsoever, wouldn't it? That would be so much worse.
They're playing us on March 10. We'll beat them then.
Okay.
Based on what, Cameron?
It's my birthday, so we have to win.
Okay.
That's as good a reason as anything that I've seen so far this season.
They are very good, and I'm glad. Auckland are a very good team this season. Not going to take that away from them, but I'm glad they didn't go 18 games, 18 wins. Southern United then also got up over Tasman United. I think they did this very late. They did. Goals in the 82nd and 89th minute to 2-1.
Some guy.
A guy 2-1. That plays for them, yeah.
Auckland City bounced back as well with a 3-2 win.
Bounce back from their draw.
Yeah, totally. A 3-2 win over Hamilton Wanderers. This was much more comfortable than that scoreline suggests.
It was 3-0 and Hamilton scored too late.
3-0 until the 89th minute, and then they scored two goals late. And basically the second goal was the last kick of the game, so no chance for a draw there really. But the probably the biggest game of the round was Canterbury United versus Team Wellington. and Canberra United also got up very late to win this 2-1. Andy Bevan getting the goal for Team Wellington 5 minutes after a Gary Ogilvie penalty, and S. Clark. I don't know who S. Clark is. Someone can help me out here. But no, S. Clark got up on the 89th minute. So
that's
on him, Shane.
Massive, massive result. Massive result, that one. It means that they not just for Canterbury, but for Eastern Suburbs and Team Wellington.
Yeah, it means that Canterbury are guaranteed a place in the top four.
What is it? Didn't Southern win all their games and improve goal difference? They can still catch Canterbury?
Goal difference doesn't matter. It's head-to-head.
Ah, okay. Yeah. And they've got head-to-head on Southern.
If it was goal difference, that would be accurate, but Canterbury have the head-to-head. It's head-to-head and Canterbury win that.
Of course, and T-Dubs have the head-to-head on Easts. Easts have the head-to-head on Canterbury, and Canterbury have the head-to-head on us.
Yeah.
And there's 1 point between the three teams.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. A fantastic finish to the season coming up.
It would be way better if it was just done on goal difference.
Well, not really, because Easts are way ahead of us. Oh, yeah.
The goal difference there is 28-17-2. So it would be less exciting but more fair, in my opinion. But yeah, so Auckland City are way ahead on 46 points. Eastern Suburbs are on 31. Team Wellington are on 31. Canterbury United on 30. So that's top four. You jump back a little bit to Southern, Hamilton, Hawke's Bay, Tasman, Waitak, and the Oenix in that order.
The T-Dubs are in Vanuatu now.
Oh, for the O-League?
Yep, they're in the O-League. Starts this weekend, so they've got their group stage games. Yes, there's two, and there's two others. I can't remember who they're playing.
That's how group stage works, Cam.
Yeah, but not necessarily. Sometimes groups have three teams.
Okay. Name something that has that case. I guess you can say the World Cup now.
And the World Cup in the past as well, 1930. Yep.
Never argue World Cup is trivia.
1930.
Yep, there were three teams and groups there.
Okay.
You are welcome.
That was 90 years ago.
It was. 89.
Who won it? Who was in the final camp?
Uruguay won 4-2 against Argentina.
Told you.
Houghton, Montevideo and Uruguay. Argentina actually led 2-1 at halftime. You're welcome.
Have you guys watched the Sepp Blatter documentary?
No.
What's it called?
I'm a cunt.
I think you'll find that's I'm a kazoo.
I'm a thieving
Patrick
cunt.
Cuts that little snippet out and puts it in various uses around the internet for you.
Yeah,
maybe emails it to your boss just in time for your review or something.
That's a good point.
If I had a boss, my boss would laugh.
There was a scene, and it was, I think it was the 1970 final between Brazil and Uruguay.
Brazil and Italy.
Brazil and Italy.
No, actually 1970 was Brazil and Czechoslovakia.
It's the one that Brazil lost where they should have won it.
Nope.
The one that I'm trying to talk about is that one.
They won in 58, 62 and 70. So they lost.
Anyway, there was a scene where
in 1950 against Uruguay in Brazil.
It's not Sepp Blatter, but it's one of the president.
That's the one where they changed their jerseys.
This is a shit story. I'm going to give up. That's probably the podcast for this week. Unless I'm
funny thing about that final was actually it was a final group with Spain and Sweden. That just happened to be the last game.
Southern United play the Wenix. Eastern Suburbs play Waitak. Horse Bay play Tasman this weekend. Bye. Seth Green. Everybody, Seth Green. What's his name? What a podcast.
Seth Green. What's that got to do with Seth Blatter?
The guy who scored the goal
against. S. Clark. His real name is Seth Green.
It's Seth Clark. His name's Seth.
I'm like, what's the little red-headed actor got to do with it?
It's taking a real turn. Was this a documentary or a comedy?